Hello and welcome to That Other Gaming Podcast, where we take a look behind the scenes of virtual reality, online gaming, streaming, and more. I'm David, a tech comms manager here at Meta, a full-time nerd and a lifelong gamer obsessed with the future of video games.
And I'm Lisa, fellow tech comms manager at Meta and recovering academic. So, what have you been playing this week?
Well, boss, I've been playing a lot more Elden Ring. That game has completely dominated my entire brain for the past while. It's all I think about. I literally dreamt about it last night.
Oh, nice.
I don't think I've been this completely obsessed with the game probably since Skyrim. It's been, you know, a while. Or I guess maybe Asgard's Wrath. I was really into that one when it first came out. But Elden Ring is the latest game from Software, which is kind of a mouthful to say. They're the developers of Dark Souls, Bloodborne, Sekiro. This is it's a very brutal kind of gothic fantasy world. It's just a super intense, hard game, but it's also just so vast and just full of cool mysteries, and I love it so far. I also downloaded Puzzle Quest 3.
Oh, nice.
Which I think I mentioned, I want to say last episode, that it was coming out soon. It came out, and I've really been enjoying that one. And my son, who is a bit of a like creepy game, creepy character fan, we've been making our way through Bendy and the Ink Machine on Xbox. We're almost finished with that one. We would be through it sooner, but he is four and he gets scared, so he asks me to stop sometimes. But he also wants me to play it. So, you know, it's one of those things. Well, what about you?
Very cool. I've still been playing through Batman the Telltale series, which is going really well. I believe I'm halfway through episode 4, so getting ready to wrap that up. And then other David, he's been playing Elden Ring, but also getting back into Destiny with the recent expansion there.
Right.
Yeah, and he's been watching some YouTube like documentaries, diving into the lore. So on a bit of a Destiny kick. On the kid front, my daughter obviously playing a lot of Roblox and then lots of Super Mario Brothers for the youngest one. He likes watching that.
Nice, nice. It's a classic. Good choice.
Yes.
On the flip side of things, today's episode is actually going to be all about multiplayer games, specifically Battle Royale games. It's a really popular genre where you drop down into the map and you battle it out against other players to be the last person standing. I played a lot of these over the years. Back when I was a journalist, I reviewed a ton of them for IGN. I actually got started with Battle Royale games with H1Z1 back before even PUBG was out, you know, transitioned over to Warzone, and I played a whole lot of them over the years. And of course, Population 1 from Big Box VR is a really big one on Quest and on PC VR. It was just a pleasure to chat with them about that one.
I bet. My experience with the Battle Royale genre is a little bit limited. Obviously, Tetris 99 is right up my alley. Lots of Fall Guys during the pandemic. That's been a big one in our household. My son loves it.
I still have the sound effects in my head that are...
Yep.
Yeah, Fall Guys is fun. It's funny because my wife loves Dead by Daylight. You know, she's a horror game fan, but she can't play Fall Guys. It gives her too much anxiety.
Really?
Yeah. Getting chased by a serial killer, that's fine. But the stress of getting knocked off a platform as a little marshmallow is like way too intense.
Yeah, with the art style and the music and the sound for Fall Guys, it doesn't play into my anxiety the way that horror and survival horror do. But I could see where it might be a little too intense.
You don't have to say that. It doesn't make sense. It's okay. She's not going to hear this anyway. It's fine.
Well, you touched on this, but super excited about our guest this week, Chia-Chin Lee, co-founder of Big Box VR, the studio behind Smashbox Arena and Population One, both a fan favorite and critically acclaimed Battle Royale shooter that's available on both Quest and the Rift platforms, as well as PC VR more broadly over on Steam.
Yeah, I sat down with Chia-Chin to talk about his journey as a game developer, what makes Population One so special, why people keep playing it, and the recently released new expansion for the game, the new Metropolis update, which just seems amazing. I haven't tried it yet myself, but it looks really cool. So let's cut over to that interview. thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you're doing well. I know Population One is just chugging right along. You guys are putting out updates all the time. So why don't we just start by talking a little bit about who you are, the background with the studio, and what you've been working on.
Yeah, good to see you again, David. So my name is Chachin Lee. I am the studio head at Big Box VR. And Big Box just joined Meta as a first-party studio back in June 2021. And before that, we were our own independent company, raised a few rounds of funding. But all along, we've been working very closely with Meta. We created a game called Population One, which launched October 2020. It was really to capture the first-person shooter, but very social in battle royale space. And we launched this game, and it was just a big success and just really fun to see how it's evolving with our community as well.
Yeah, congrats on the game. And less than a year later, you get acquired by Meta. So I guess you're doing something right, correct?
It's been a long journey. It's not been that simple.
Yeah, I remember first playing an early build of this game back at CES, I want to say 2018, and then your previous game even before Population One. You've been in VR for quite a while.
Yeah, we've been in VR quite a while, and we're true believers of the platform and the technology, and we really think of it as a great way to connect people online. And that was the premise of the company when we started it.
Yeah, I would love to drill down on that point about social interaction that you talk about, because it really is very different in VR compared to if I were to play PUBG, Fortnite, Warzone, any of those other battle royale games, then go play Population One. It's the same general genre, but that social aspect is so different in VR. Why do you think it feels so different?
If you haven't tried VR, so obvious, but if you have tried VR, then it's very obvious. And in a nutshell, it's really that presence, that feeling of your friends or someone next to you, and you can see their body movements when they're pointing to an enemy, when you're squatting up. It's just that feeling of connection. And that is super unique. I've worked on games for a long time. I started out all the way back in the Soldier of Fortune days at Raven Software.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yes, that was a long time ago. And then I moved to Seattle to join Valve, worked on like Half-Life 2, stuff like that. Then worked on the SOCOMs, which, you know, was a big FPS on the PlayStation platforms. And then did social games on the Facebook platform. And so when you look at all these different games, getting people online and connecting, even in the old Soldier of Fortune, Quake days. It was really about finding servers, finding people you can play with. But even back then, it just never felt like you were really playing with them in a way. If you haven't tried it, if you haven't tried VR, go borrow, buy, beg, steal for in a headset, jump in and try it out, because you'll literally feel like you're there with other people. And it's just amazing.
Yeah, it is really special. I think shooting games especially, you know, you have such a long history of working on shooters and outside of VR. And, you know, now bringing that experience to VR, playing a game like Population One, playing a game like Onward, like Contractors, Pavlov, any of those shooters, it just, you hate to use the buzzwords, but immersive presence, you know, just the feeling of holding something and, you know, taking cover and just being so physical, it just really elevates things and add on that social layer. And it really is awesome. I mean, it's just so cool getting to know body language in VR and getting to understand more. You know, you can hear the exasperation in someone's voice when they're like taking cover or climbing quickly or, you know, something like that. You don't get that outside of VR.
100%. And in Population One, one of the key things that we wanted to do was, you know, we created this thing called vertical combat system, where anything you see, you can go to, you can climb it, you can jump off and glide away. And when you combine that freedom of movement in that space with a shooter type of game, it's a limitless set of things that can happen. And we're still trying to figure out how to explore this, actually.
Yeah, this is actually an excellent segue to talk about the newest update coming to Population One, or rather the most recent update that just came to Population One. Can you tell us a little bit about what the update is, what it added, and what the new mechanics are?
we had an update, and it's big. It's a big new map called Metropolis. And in Metropolis, it's a giant city, basically. It has five districts, and each district has its own unique characteristic. There's like a neon district, a slums district. And the cool thing about it is that first it has jump pads in the city. So you can go in and walk on the jump pad, get really ejected up into the sky, but it really gets you up high fast. So you can glide around and observe and shoot. It's a very fun type of feeling. On top of that, the city is, it's really the first time we've just tripled in on the vertical combat stuff, because it's layer upon layers of stuff, indoors and outdoors and high buildings and stores on the ground. And it really feels like you're going into a whole new city. And that's the feeling we wanted. And the players play in that city in a mode called Metropolis Royale, which is really catered to the space. It's still a battle royale, but the sense of pacing and teamwork is completely different. And it's very, very cool.
That sounds incredible. You mentioned this is a new map. Does that mean the previous map is a whole separate location, like entirely different map that someone would load into, like it's an either or situation, or how does that work exactly?
Yeah, actually, you'll be matched into this map specifically. And the map is really, really big. And it's a gigantic space, and it easily fits 18 people, if not beyond. But what we did was just to make the world of Population 1 and the lore contiguous and it all makes sense. We actually took that map, even though it's gigantic, and we put it back into the even bigger map so that it's like a real destination in that world. So we wanted the two worlds to make sure that it makes sense as a logical space.
Got it. Okay, because I know in the previous updates like Kingdom Age or other updates like that, it would just kind of like a little corner might be replaced by a small section, but this sounds much more robust than that.
You'll have to experience it for real because it's a giant new thing. And in a way, we looked at this, it actually sparked our own imagination as well, because now we want to release more of these unique and independent maps for other people to experience. Because that one contiguous world thing is really interesting. And our premise was always, here's one giant map and we'll evolve it over time. But the truth is, I think having that happen alongside with other maps happening might be actually, it kind of brings a freshness to the game. So that's something that we're currently exploring.
That sounds really cool. It sounds like a really good way to evolve the game, like you said. And one of the new things that you guys added, which you mentioned, are the jump pads. So I'm imagining something kind of like Sonic the Hedgehog here. You know, you jump on a pad, it sends you flying up in the air. Is that kind of the idea? Does it send you really, really high?
It sends you pretty high, yes. And then we haven't released this, but we've experimented with different type of jump pads, like something that when you walk through, it propels you forward, like a more forward motion kind of thing. There's ones that make you fly up. There's one that make you fly sideways. Like it basically, we're adding stuff to double down on our vertical combat feeling.
That sounds great. And to go back to what we were saying earlier, for people that haven't tried VR, haven't played the game, whenever we talk about the verticality, you really feel it. It's not like a normal game where it's just on a TV screen, you see your character go up in the air. There's like a true sense of almost vertigo where it just feels like you're really up high. And then to glide, you have to actually physically stretch your arms out. That's how you initiate the gliding. And I can only imagine just how intense it must be to fly up and down and all around all the time. Because I feel like for me, whenever I play Population 1, the initial drop is where I do most of my gliding. And then I climb a little bit, but you don't glide a whole lot from there because there aren't a ton of super tall buildings all the time everywhere. So this new map sounds incredible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'll see players on every single level of the map. The up high and the mid tiers below, they're hiding their corridors. There's like every single game that we've played in that map, the ending's different in a drastic way. And it's pretty freaking awesome.
That's really good to hear. And I feel like a game like this, it's if the map wasn't undergoing massive changes all the time, it would be hard to get into for new players. But because you have these big updates that change things up so much, a new player could jump in and not be totally outmatched, because even the seasoned players are unfamiliar with the new areas because you guys are updating it so often, which is really good.
Yeah, there's always a balance, you know, and this is something we talk about internally a lot. It's like, do we give people new, like, for example, a new item and a weapon? They're like new tools. On one hand, it's really interesting for existing players to come in and learn all these new tools, but it's, you kind of keep growing the skill gap there. It gets very difficult. Whereas if you have a existing set of tools, but you have new maps, which is like you have new situations to use your existing tools in, that might be interesting, more interesting. But honestly, we're examining how to deliver the best content for both new players and existing players. That's our goal. Not to include mixing it up with new game modes. Because even though the Battle Royale format is super exciting and it's awesome, we've released other modes like the Legions mode or Duos or War mode that is a little bit more casual, actually, and people love it. So that's something we're exploring further as well.
Yeah, I love Duos. I think that's probably my favorite mode I've tried just because that's what I used to play in PUBG all the time. And I was happy when they added it to Warzone. Duos is kind of what I gravitate towards in Battle Royale. So I was happy to see that added recently.
It's interesting because we thought Duos would be like more hardcore in a way, but it was actually more casual. We've seen the players who play Duos are more casual shooter fans rather than the core shooter. It's a really bizarre thing. Sometimes you launch these things and you expect one thing and you get another thing. I don't know. Like, does that surprise you, for example?
I feel like it is a little surprising. I almost wonder if the spectrums are just wider because if you were to go into a competitive tournament setting, maybe Duos would be appealing just because of the communication could be stronger between two people. But I think ultimately most people, it's easier to find one friend to jump into something with than it is to find two. I feel like usually it's either two or four. A trio is kind of hard usually. It seems more like even numbers are easier to come by, so it's more friendly that way. But that's purely speculation. I have no idea if that's true or not.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you guys add new weapons and new items and stuff usually with these updates. Can you talk at all about any of the new weapons or items that have been added into the Metropolis update?
For this update, we're really doubling down on making that new map massive and correct and adding the movement with jump pads and all that stuff. But in parallel, in the background, we're developing new weapons and other stuff like that. And it won't spoil all the surprise there, but there's some really interesting stuff coming. And we're just in the background always trying new stuff.
The team's done a really good job, I feel like, of pretty consistent updates and additions to the game. And it must be hard to find that balance with the VR game because creating content, there are so many more considerations from a development perspective than there would be for a non-VR game. So can you speak at all to how you were able to find that cadence? Because for the past few months, I feel like Big Box has done a really good job of being consistent. And what's the secret there? Do you have any advice?
I think it helps to build an entire team that's completely obsessed with the product and also how the community plays with that product. And so just being extremely player focused is important. But in terms of the actual life secret sauce that happens, we do so many builds and each build has to be tested by bots actually running through the build to make sure the performance right. And then we have to get the test by live humans. We have a play test every day. So this goes on for game balancing, but also for the performance. And we just have a very rapid and constant release cycle. And it's a very tough thing to do. But once you hone it in and everyone's tuned to it, we can actually make really fun and great things happen quickly.
Yeah, I would also add on to that. For the most part, I would say, relatively speaking, Population 1 had a really smooth launch. And I think hitting the ground fast is super important because then you can immediately focus on new content quickly rather than having to make a ton of fixes and updates just to get the game stable, which I think is what happens with a lot of new games that come out that are online heavy or online only, such as this one.
Yeah, we had a very big launch when we released it. And we were in the background working for months on the load testing. And honestly, we had a lot of play tests and we just kept breaking it. And honestly, you can never really prepare for that launch. But we did see a little bit of breakage, but we fixed it on the fly. And hopefully no one noticed that much. But it's really exciting to see that giant spike, actually. And we were well prepared for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we actually didn't get a chance to talk about this a whole lot. You mentioned it earlier, but what are the main differences with the Metropolis Royale mode? I know you said it's more centralized, focused on the new content area, but what other ways is it different than just the normal 3v3 type of battle royale?
Yeah, we tuned the zone speeds and times and the pods. We tuned it so that the pacing would be quite different from the usual large map that we have. And due to the density, it's interesting to watch people come in on the pods, and it's like super strategic. Almost you're like, do I want a hot drop? Because the funny thing is, if you don't do it right, like you could actually just like land in with other squads and die very fast, you know, because it's like pretty dense and it's very vertical, right? And so people have to choose their moments. Like, do I want to drop to the ground and hide? Do I want to go to the rooftop and work my way to different spaces? And so that sense of strategy feels extremely different from our big map.
Got it. Given the differences, well, what are your tips for players if they're coming into Metropolis for the first time? Is a hot drop the right way to go just because it's so much faster? And for me, whenever I play a battle royale game, I usually gravitate towards people because I feel like if I can just get that first kill, you know, then I'm just good the rest of the game. But that's not the case for everybody. So what are your tips?
I'm a very particular type of player. I like to hide. So my tip may not be applicable to everyone, but my tip is for that map, look for other people where they're going, let them do their thing, and then skirt into the alleyways and just like try to find, there's actually a store area that has a lot of loot. And I would actually scurry in there, loot up, hide in the alleyways and let other people do their thing and then come out, because it's the map is so big that sometimes you can hide for a while. And it's almost like an alley rat strategy, I guess.
Not the most honorable description, but I think I see your strategy there that it makes sense, you know, build up your arsenal behind the scenes, you know, hide in the shadows and then just attack whenever you need to. I remember the first time my wife played a battle royale game. She actually got all the way to the last circle. It was in PUBG. She just hid in the mountains. This was back on the desert map. And so, I mean, hiding is totally a valid strategy in these kind of games. And I think Population One, especially because in VR, you can maneuver your body into crevices sometimes that maybe someone might not even think to look. You can kind of hide in certain areas. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So you hide and then in the end stages, go as high as you can, basically get the high ground. But there's so many layers here that there's just a lot of moments for surprises. And if you haven't tried it yet, definitely go try it.
Yeah, the verticality is a good point because it's very easy to forget to look up. And I think it takes a while to get used to that full 360 type of awareness that you need here. So that's a very good tip.
Definitely.
Great. Is there anything else that you can share about the lore of the Metropolis City or what's going on exactly with the island, with the game, and just how things are going?
Yeah, behind Pop One, the game, we've always had this thread of the Seekers versus the Bureaus. And the Game Bureau is the corporation that created the Population One game, and they propped up the tower within Population One and different structures. And there's a big question as to how or why this giant city sprung up. So that is the underlying through line of Metropolis. And we'll be revealing a lot of tidbits along the way.
All right, well, before I let you go, do you mind just reminding everyone where they can buy the game, how much it is, and what they should look forward to in the future?
Yeah, so definitely check out Population One. It's available on the Quest platform, so Quest 1, Quest 2. It's also available for Steam, and it's $29.99. Please give it a try. We'd love for more players to come in, give us feedback, and we'd love to make the game better for you.
Awesome. I can't wait to check it out.
Thank you so much.
I love getting to chat with Cha about the ways that they're tapping into the magic of VR for a big team-based shooter like that. Population One is just so liberating to play, so exciting, and it's definitely one of my favorite VR games.
Yeah, and you know, we talked in a recent episode about Live Ops, and Pop One is definitely a title that does that incredibly well. They just keep it so fresh for the fans, pulling in new players, but also reviving folks who have maybe picked up and played and have walked away from it. They always have more for you to come back to.
Absolutely. That's so important for multiplayer games, mm-hmm. especially. All right, now it's time for Jaloza versus Jagna, where we each get 1 minute to make our case on a chosen topic.
For this episode, we'll be debating the best nonviolent battle royale game to mix things up. We're debating between Fall Guys and Tetris 99, since not everyone wants to play a shooter or maybe doesn't want to play a shooter all the time. But you can still get that thrill of competition without firing a single bullet. And David, why don't you go first this time?
Got it. I'm going to take the game where you get to play as a little jelly bean with a face, and that's Fall Guys. It is one of the most adorable games out there. It's hilarious. It's fun. It took the world by storm when it first came out during the pandemic, and for perfectly valid reasons. It's a lot like playing Wipeout, that competitive game show that used to be on TV for a while. And it's a mixture of that with kind of an obstacle course meets fancy dress up with little squishy bean people. And it's just so much fun. There's a lot of variety in the terms of the obstacles. You can play chase, you can jump over objects, you can avoid things. There's even a level where you have to try to run up a giant mountain with, you know, huge food falling on top of you. It's just such an inventive, creative game, and they've done a wonderful job supporting it, updating it with new mini games and new costumes, and it's just so much fun. It's very accessible. Anyone can play and have a good time.
All right. Tough act to follow, but here goes. I'm going to go with Tetris 99. My love of the franchise should be no secret at this point for listeners of the show, but what can you say? It takes a classic, beloved franchise and reimagines it for the battle royale craze that we found ourselves in the last several years. There is the ability to play single player if you're not in the mood for battle royale, so I think it gets some points there, but the ability to screw up your opponent's game by clearing lines and sending over, essentially adding blocks to their screen to make things a little more frantic, a little more hectic, just helps up the ante on the game and keep you guessing. And as the sound effects get sped up as you run out of time, as I am, it just keeps the adrenaline flowing.
And quick shout out to an honorable mention, Super Mario Brothers 35, yes. Which is a really cool game as well with a similar sending, you know, enemies to your opponent mechanic. That's another fun one.
And same dev team as Tetris 99, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Now you know what we think. It's your turn to tell us what you think. Head on over to our Facebook group or Twitter and vote on which is the best nonviolent battle royale game, Fall Guys or Tetris 99. And let us know what you think about the show on Twitter at @OtherGamingPod.
All right. So with all my obsession and talk about Elden Ring, I actually took to Twitter and asked on my own personal Twitter about whether mm-hmm. or not I should play a different From Software game after I finish Elden Ring. I'm probably less than halfway through with Elden Ring, I would assume. Most people are saying it's taking them, you know, 100 plus hours to finish. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a while. But I have asked people on Twitter what I should play next. Should it be Demon's Souls on PS5, the remake from Bluepoint? Or should it be Dark Souls Remastered or Bloodborne or Sekiro? Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the four franchises, if you will. There are three Dark Souls games, obviously, but if I were to pick a Dark Souls, I'd probably pick the first one just to play the original.
Right.
But Demon's Souls is the one that started it all. That was the original PS3 game. It has a PS5 remake that just came out. So those are my four options. Let me know what you think. You can go tweet at me or yell at me on Facebook or somewhere else if you'd like. There's a lot of really good responses from people so far, including one from our own Hayden here at Meta. He recommended Bloodborne. He said it's pretty easy compared to the other one. Sekiro is very difficult. Mm-hmm. He said Bloodborne was the first game he finished from that developer, and it felt very doable aside from just a few optional areas. On the flip side, a friend of mine, Aaron Garst, has said that Sekiro is the toughest, so it's the natural first choice. Just go in and beat mm-hmm. the hardest one, and then the others, you know, will be more approachable after that. Have you played any of these games? Do you have a recommendation?
Other David has played through, I think, all of those games, and I've watched quite a bit of them. I would probably go middle of the road with Dark Souls, and I think that's going to be a nice balance between the difficulty that From Software is known for, but maybe not quite as unforgiving as Sekiro.
Yeah, that was where my mind was going, but it seems like most people are saying that even the remaster, the game has not aged super well. Mm. So I don't know if that's going to be the one I pick. I'll have to wait and see.
That could be true. It's been quite a few years since I watched him play through Dark Souls, but been watching him make his way through Elden Ring, not as quite a steady clip as you've been playing, but really enjoying what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I think I'll eventually get to a point where real life will catch up to me more and I'll just have to, you know, tone down the hours invested. But mm-hmm. we'll wait and see. My wife is one of those weird people that likes to fall asleep to the sounds of death and murder in video games. so she will often request that I stay up and play a game because, you know, she just likes background noise. So we'll have to wait and see.
That works out well.
Yeah, yin and yang. All right, before we go, I want to drop a live streaming hot tip for all my fellow content creators out there. This time, I want to talk about equipment suggestions. I know in the past, I spoke about the importance of good audio, but this time, I want to talk about the importance of good video for your camera. Ideally, you know, if you're going to be streaming a video game, you're probably going to have, you know, 90%+ of the screen taken up by game footage. But people do like watching face cams. I know for me, if I click on a stream and there's no camera, I probably am not going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to watch straight gameplay, I would go to YouTube or something like that with the on-demand platform. But if I'm watching a stream, you know, I want to see the streamer. I want to communicate with them and feel connected to them and see their face and reactions. And so having a camera is super important. And you can get very, very, very capable HD cameras now, you know, on Amazon for very cheap. Logitech is usually my preferred brand. They make a lot of really good cameras. You can get a Ring Light super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend one that has different colors and warmth levels so you can customize, you know, based on, you know, how bright your screen is, what color the screen is. That's important so it keeps a consistent color on your face, which is good. Also, backlighting. If you don't want to green screen yourself and you want to have background behind you, I recommend having some LEDs that you can change colors on, or, you know, they also have LEDs that will react to your voice. So they kind of like blink as you talk, which is kind of cool. You know, think of simple things like that to elevate your setup a little bit. That really does help.
Oh, that's really interesting. Before you mentioned it, I never would have thought about the importance of having a good camera, but you're right. When we have streams on in the background or the foreground at home, it really adds a lot to be able to see the streamer's reaction and their facial expressions. It just adds so much to the experience.
Yeah, for sure. It lets you get more creative with your scenes and whatnot in OBS. You can, you know, set up a scene that is just mostly your face talking, or you can have a scene where it's gameplay or mm-hmm. a back scene, or you get more options that way. And quick shout out for a Facebook gaming partner that does a great job of using, you know, their camera and has a lot of really colorful, exciting reactions. That's Black Retro Gamer. He's a partner on Facebook Gaming. Obviously, by the name, plays a lot of retro games. I think as of right now, he's in the middle of a Spyro playthrough. So, you know, shout out to Insomniac for their original PS1 trilogy. Great games. Yeah, give him a watch.
Thanks so much for joining us on That Other Gaming podcast from Meta. Remember, we'd love to connect with you on our Facebook group, and you can follow along with us on Twitter and Instagram at Other Gaming Pod.
The show is produced by LWC Studios. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer and composer theme music. Kojin Toshiro also contributed music. That Other Gaming podcast is executive produced by Michael Kirkland and Juleka Lantigua, art by BJ Prima.
Thanks for listening.